Morning and good afternoon, everyone. I'm Alexandra Lewis, Group Treasurer for National Grid, and this afternoon's call is to provide an update to debt investors on our 2019-20 full-year results. I'll give a summary of this morning's presentation, including how our businesses have performed, our priorities going forward, as well as additional commentary on future debt financing. The update I anticipate will last for about 30 minutes, followed by some dedicated time during which you'll have the opportunity to ask questions. And the presentation is available to download from the Results Centre section of our investor website. Before we turn to our results for 19-20, I want to start today's presentation by taking you through how we've been reacting to COVID-19 and how well our business continues to deliver despite this major new challenge. So turning to slide three, at the end of March, as the crisis unfolded, we successfully implemented our business continuity plans. Although COVID has had a profound impact on demand levels and on the way in which we work, I'm pleased to say that we've maintained excellent levels of reliability across our networks, and we've continued to deliver on our significant capital program. As the crisis evolved, we took action to change working practices quickly and safely, and despite these changes, we've continued to deliver strong operational performance. Turning to slide four and our customers, our focus has been not only to keep the electricity and gas flowing, but also to help those customers who may be in financial difficulty. In the US, recognizing the economic environment, we're not pursuing debt collections or disconnecting customers at the present time. We've also deferred proposed rate increases in New York. In the UK, we'll continue to work with other network companies and Ofgem to help suppliers address financial challenges that COVID has brought without imposing additional burden on customers. And a good example is the deferral of network charges for eligible suppliers. This will help the most vulnerable suppliers with a regulatory mechanism which allows us to recover these charges within our financial year. We're also working with Ofgem to see how we can help our customers bear the increased balancing costs associated with managing the system through COVID. And in addition, we're supporting our communities. There are many examples from across the business, including financial donations to help the most vulnerable, support by individual employees in their local communities, and direct actions taken by our businesses. Turning on to slide five, of course, as well as ensuring the support of our staff, customers, and communities, we also need to manage the financial impact of COVID. Like all companies, National Grid is not immune to COVID. However, as a regulated utility, for the most part, there are either mechanisms in place or regulatory precedents for recovering additional costs arising from COVID. In addition to regulatory recovery, we're also maintaining our focus on cost efficiency to help offset additional costs where we can. Whilst this means that we do not expect a material economic impact on the group in the medium term, we will see an earnings and cash flow impact in the near term. So for FY21, the current financial year, working with our assumption of a gradual easing of lockdown, we currently forecast the impact of COVID on underlying operating profit to be around £400 million. Whilst we'd expect to see some additional costs arising in the UK and a limited impact in our NGB business, the majority of the £400 million impact is forecast to come from our US business, driven by three broadly similar impacts. That is the deferral of rate increases in New York, incremental COVID-related costs, and higher bad debt charges. So taking these in turn, firstly, we currently expect rates to be held broadly flat across our New York businesses this year, as we've deferred rate increases in our Niagara Mohawk business, and with rates held flat in our Kedney and Kedley businesses as we discuss a new rate agreement. As is normal, we'll work with our regulators to agree the appropriate framework for recovery. Secondly, we're also seeing higher levels of COVID-related costs, such as sequestering critical staff on site and increased IT costs, as well as higher OPEX from lower capitalisation of our workforce costs given changes to our capital programme. Again, we're working with our regulators on ways of recovering these incremental costs. With a weaker economic backdrop, we are likely to see levels of bad debt increase. For FY20, we've taken an additional £117 million provision for bad debts over and above our normal run rate against our receivables balance at the year end. Looking forward to FY21, we'd again expect to see a similar elevated level of bad debt expense, although the final bad debt level will ultimately depend on how each of the states we operate in exit the COVID crisis. As is usual practice, we would anticipate recovering bad debts above our regulatory allowances through future rate plans. Turning to cash flow, overall, we currently estimate the impact of COVID to be up to £1 billion. This will ultimately depend on levels of demand across our networks, cash collection from our US customers, and timing of collections of network charges and system costs in the UK. So this will therefore also have an impact on net debt. Taking into account these assumed cash flow impacts of COVID and excluding the impact of foreign exchange, net debt is expected to increase from £28.6 billion this year to around £31.5 billion at the end of March 2021. Together, these headwinds will impact our credit metrics in the near term, but we expect this impact to unwind as we recover these costs through our regulatory mechanisms. So having provided that context, on slide five now, I'd like to turn to the strong results we've delivered in the past year. Underlying operating profit of £3.5 billion was broadly in line with the prior year. And this reflects the expected increase in revenues from new rate cases in the US and lower operating costs as our efficiency programs have started to deliver, but offset by the impact of an additional provision for US bad debts, as we've discussed. Underpinning this performance was a record year of investment in critical infrastructure, with CapEx up 19% to £5.4 billion. This was driven predominantly by increased spend in our UK electricity transmission business as we progressed major projects like Hinkley. Higher US CapEx, much of it mandated on safety spend, and higher CapEx in National Grid Ventures and continued interconnector investment, as well as the acquisition of Geronimo Energy. This delivered organic asset growth of 9%, above our stated target of 5-7%. We've achieved a group ROE of 11.7% in line with the prior year, delivering ongoing sustainable returns for our shareholders. And in accordance with our policy, the board has proposed a final dividend of 32 pence per share. This takes the total dividend for the year to 48.57 pence per share, an increase of 2.6% on last year, in line with UK inflation. So as you can see, it's been a strong year for financial performance across the group. I'll now turn to progress on our operational priorities last year, starting with the US on slide seven. The financial performance of each business segment is included in the appendix. During the year, we achieved an ROE of 9.3%, an increase of 50 basis points, representing 99% of our allowed return. We achieved strong rate base growth of 12%, up from 9.2% last year, as we invested over $4 billion in critical infrastructure, and as a number of projects under construction were added to the rate base. This investment was mainly driven by mandated spend to maintain the safety and reliability of our networks. An example of this is the 458 miles of leak-prone pipe we replaced across our jurisdictions. This brings the total we've replaced to date to more than 10,500 miles and means we are now halfway through the long-term replacement program. We've also made good progress on the regulatory front. In October, we agreed new rates for Massachusetts Electric with a 5-year agreement. And we've made good progress on our cost efficiency program, where we've met our target to deliver $30 million of savings this year and remain on course to deliver $50 million in 2021. However, as you're aware, we also experienced some challenges with gas constraints in downstate New York. As you know, in November, we agreed to lift the moratorium on all new connections until September 2021. Since then, and in line with the terms of the agreement with the state, we filed a report outlining options for meeting long-term customer demand. This was followed by a series of public and virtual meetings that were attended by over 800 people. From these meetings, feedback was included in a supplementary report that we filed with the regulator. We're continuing to work proactively with New York State, the regulator, and our customers to find a long-term solution and anticipate an outcome this summer. Turning now to slide 8 and the UK, it's been an important year as we head towards the end of RIIO-T1. Operationally, both our electricity and gas transmission businesses continue to deliver good levels of performance. During the year, we achieved an ROE of 12.4% within our target range of 200 to 300 basis points of outperformance. And we continued our capital program with investment of £1.3 billion, which was up 5% on the prior year, giving asset growth of 3.8%. This takes our total investment in RIIO-1 to over £11 billion, delivering world-class reliability, enabling the connection of 4.6 gigawatts of renewable energy, and generating over £700 million of savings for customers. And of course, we've had significant focus on RIIO-T2 with draft business plans submitted in December. And finally, during the year, we've remained focused on our efficiency programs and exceeded our savings target of £50 million. Moving now to National Grid Ventures and our other businesses on slide 9. It's been another year of significant progress. Investment was up substantially to £815 million, mainly driven by higher interconnector spend together with our investment in Geronimo. Progress on our new interconnectors remains on track. On IFA2, the subsea cable connection has been completed and successfully tested, and commissioning of the link is on course for the end of this year. On our North Sea Link and Viking interconnectors, we've managed the disruption caused by COVID, and commissioning remains on track. And last July, we completed the acquisition of Geronimo Energy and have since announced the start of commercial operations of our 200-megawatt wind farm in South Dakota. Turning next to slide 10 and interest, tax and earnings. Financing costs increased by 6% to £1 billion, primarily due to higher net debt in our US business and hybrid buyback costs, partly offset by lower UK RPI. The effective interest rate decreased from 4.3% to 4.1%. The underlying effective tax rate was 19.9%, 30 basis points higher than FY19, primarily as a result of lower value property sales in FY20. Underlying earnings were broadly flat at £2 billion. Next, on slide 11, operating cash flow was £4.9 billion, £450 million higher than last year. This was driven by higher regulated business income, lower year-end weather-related US receivables, lower US pension costs, and reduced exceptional cash costs. Closing net debt was £28.6 billion, an underlying increase of £2.7 billion after allowing for an £800 million adverse movement in exchange rates, the impact of adopting IFRS 16, and receipt of the final Cadent proceeds of almost £2 billion, which were retained in the business. Turning to our credit metrics, where Moody's RCF to debt ratio was 9.2% and S&P's FFO to debt metric was at 12.3%. These both reflect higher tax and pension costs and adverse timing, partly offset by lower exceptional cash payments and, in the case of the RCF ratio, a higher scrip uptake. We've also guided previously for our regulatory gearing levels to remain around 65%, and at the year end this stood at 63%, which remains consistent with the group's credit rating. During the year, we further reduced the level of the balance sheet hedge of our US assets to around 70%. This followed our periodic review of its effectiveness, and we now see that a slightly lower hedge range gives greater stability for our credit metrics. As a result, our US dollar denominated debt balance now stands at $20 billion compared to $21 billion last year. Next, on slide 12, group capital investment at FY20 was £5.4 billion. Of this, approximately £4.5 billion relates to our investment in critical infrastructure across both our regulated UK and US businesses, with a large proportion focused on meeting mandated safety and reliability targets. A further £500 million was invested in our interconnector programme, with IFA2 set to commission this year. We've now passed peak investment for this programme. Finally, we also invested over £200 million in the acquisition of our large-scale renewable energy business, Geronimo, during the year. Our ongoing funding for the group investment programme remains robust, with strong internal cash generation supported by the scrip dividend, which we continue to utilise given current high levels of investment, as we have said previously. Excuse me. And with respect to debt funding, which I'll touch on further towards the end of the presentation, as well as regular bond issuance, we used our green financing framework to issue our inaugural green bond in January and for an ECA-backed loan to fund our Viking interconnector in April. On to the outlook for the current year on slide 13. In the US, we expect to see net revenue increases more than offset by bad debt and higher COVID-related costs, as described previously. We forecast depreciation to be around £100 million higher, given higher levels of investment in the rate base. In the UK, additional COVID-related costs will lead to a small year-on-year reduction in underlying operating profit expectations for electricity transmission. In gas transmission with limited COVID costs, we still expect to see an increase in underlying operating profit. National Grid Ventures operating profits are expected to decrease by around 5% year-on-year due to lower interconnector arbitrage, and the contribution from our other activities will also be lower due to lower property profits. Our interest charge is expected to be a little below FY20, reflecting lower RPI inflation and lower interest rates. We expect a tax rate of around 22%. Overall, group capital investment is expected to be around £5 billion, leading to asset growth within our 5 to 7% target range. Whilst COVID will bring near-term earnings and cash flow headwinds, the underlying operations of the company remain strong, and this has enabled the board to confirm the dividend policy. And as previously announced, due to the current level of investment, we do not expect to buy back the scrip issued during FY21. Next, on slide 15, I'll discuss our longer-term objectives and priorities for the year ahead. National Grid has a critical role to play in enabling the energy transition. This is why our vision is to be at the heart of a clean, fair and affordable energy future. Supporting that vision, our four strategic priorities are to enable the energy transition for all, to deliver for our customers efficiently, to grow our organisational capabilities, and to empower our people for great performance. And these strategic priorities will underpin where we focus this year. Let me talk you through each of our focus areas in more detail before I come back to our clean energy ambitions. starting with our US rate plans on slide 16. Whilst the long-term investment requirements across our jurisdictions have not changed, the current backdrop means we'll have to adjust our short-term priorities. As I set out earlier, we'll see revenue and cost impacts from COVID in the near term. This means that our immediate focus will be on working with our regulators to agree the appropriate rate plans for the medium term and to achieve the timely recovery of increased costs. So with that context in mind, let me now take you through our rate filing plans for the rest of the year. Let me start with our downstate New York gas businesses, KEDNY and KEDLI, where we filed for new rates in April 2019. At the beginning of this month, we resumed settlement negotiations with the PSC. Whether we agree a one-year or a multi-year deal this summer, we expect rates to remain flat for our customers this year. And at the same time in downstate New York, as I mentioned earlier, we'll continue to work on delivering the solutions required to address gas supply constraints. In our upstate business, Niagara Mohawk, we were due to file for new rates this spring for the period starting April 2021. However, we've delayed the filing and are exploring options, including an extension of the current rate plan or a rate case filing later this summer. With regards to Massachusetts Gas, our current intention is to file towards the end of the year. As with previous filings, our aim will be to ensure rates are increasingly forward-looking, incentive-based, and multi-year. Our second area of focus in the US is efficient investment, on slide 17. The vast majority of our work is needed to improve the safety, reliability, and resilience of our networks. Our top priority will be delivering this work as efficiently as possible, and this is particularly true in the context of COVID. This includes finding new streamlined processes and digital solutions. For example, in our gas business, we're rolling out our gas business enablement program. And on digitalization, we've recently launched a new system that automates our dispatch processes for our electricity distribution workforce. These examples, together with others, will help us to deliver our investment plans efficiently while minimizing bill impacts for customers. Turning to the UK, I'll start with regulation on slide 18, where in our business plan submitted in December, we're proposing investments to maintain reliable and resilient networks that can support a changing energy system whilst keeping bills as low as possible. In the past few months, we've been engaging constructively with Ofgem to address the points raised by the challenge group, which they published in January. We were pleased that our greater level of stakeholder engagement was recognised by the challenge group, but we also recognise that we've got work to do to provide more evidence around our asset health investment plans. The next key milestones in the process will be Ofgem's draft determination, expected in early July, and final determination, which is expected at the end of this calendar year. As we progress through the year, we'll continue to work constructively with Ofgem to agree a framework that puts customers at the centre of the price control, enables the energy networks of the future, and provides a financial package that allows a fair return for our investors. Turning to slide 19, on delivering innovation and efficiency for our customers, we're on track to meet our cost reduction target of £100 million for 2020-21. This year, our efficiency focus will be on three key areas: streamlining our maintenance operating procedures, further digital innovations to increase the productivity of our field force, and making step change improvements to our back office processes. And we're innovating for our customers. As an example, we've recently launched and are continuing to develop two new digital platforms, which will help customers with reduced connection costs and reduce the time it takes to connect to our network. Finally, on Natural Grid Ventures on slide 20, the major focus will be continued investment in the three new interconnector projects, North Sea Link, IFA2, and Viking. By the end of this year, we'll have completed IFA 2, be 85% through our construction programme on North Sea Link, and be one-third of the way through delivering Viking. With investment of just over £1 billion to date, we have around £1 billion left to invest through to 2023. And when all online, we'll expect these interconnectors, together with NEMO, the Belgian link that is already operating, to contribute £250 million of EBITDA from the mid-2020s. With regards to our US renewable energy business, it's been a successful first year after our acquisition of Geronimo. And looking forward, our pipeline of future investment opportunities continues to strengthen. In recent months, we've signed power purchase agreements that will underpin nearly 500 megawatts of solar projects. Spanning across South Dakota, Illinois, and Kentucky, these projects will commence operations between 2021 and 2023, and we expect further announcements like these in the months ahead. On slide 21, I'll now return to our clean energy ambition, which sits at the heart of our vision for National Grid. Today, we're strengthening the commitment we made in November to reach net zero for our own emissions by 2050 by setting ourselves a more ambitious interim target. That target is to achieve 80% carbon reduction on our 1990 baseline by 2030 and 90% reduction by 2040. In the UK, in our RIIO-T2 business plans, we've committed to replace over 50% of our internal fleet with alternative fuel vehicles by 2026. And we're continuing to lead. We're continuing to lead in developing alternatives to the insulating gas SF6 so that from 2026, we'll no longer install any new equipment that uses this greenhouse gas. And in the US, we've also made commitments to decarbonize our internal fleet, and we continue to reduce emissions by replacing leak-prone pipes. This morning, we were pleased to announce that we'll be holding an investor event in October on our environmental, social, and governance objectives. The event will allow us to talk in more detail about how we'll achieve our own targets, but also, and perhaps more importantly, how we're playing a key role in enabling the wider transition to a low-carbon future. Finally, turning to our recent debt issuance activity and expectations for the rest of the current year on slide 23. Over the past financial year to 31 March, we raised around £2.9 billion of new senior long-term debt, including 13 bond issues. The majority of this was raised by our UK operating companies, National Grid Electricity Transmission, NGET, and National Grid Gas, NGG. This included new issues in sterling, including NGG's first public bond since 2008, a Euro 500 million green bond for NGET, the first from our group-wide green financing framework that was established last November, and also a number of EMTN private placements to diversify our funding sources. Issuance from our US entities was lower than recent years as we injected $2.5 billion of equity into NG&A with the proceeds from the sale of our final stake in Cadence. And as you know, we refinanced our hybrid debt that was due for a first call in June 2020. Thank you for your continued support across these transactions. So far this financial year, we've already been active in securing new financing. In early April, following a more challenging period for markets, we took advantage of an improvement in tone to issue new bonds in the US for Narragansett Electric Company and in the UK for NGET, raising around £900 million in total at attractive rates. Outside of the capital markets, we closed around £600 million of new export credit agency financing for the Viking Link interconnector, which will be drawn over time. This transaction is the first ever green loan covered by multi-export credit agencies. For the rest of the current financial year, we expect further issuance from NGET, as well as issuance from our US operating companies. National Grid North America may also issue in the second half of the financial year. In terms of available facilities across the group, we continue to maintain significant levels of committed bank lines to ensure sufficient liquidity. We currently have undrawn committed general liquidity lines throughout the group of around £5.5 billion from our group of core relationship banks. In addition to this, our UK electricity system operator also has £550 million of committed facilities. All of these facilities remained undrawn throughout recent months. Finally, drawing attention to our strong credit ratings, with respect to National Grid PLC, Moody's, S&P and Fitch have all maintained their ratings on stable outlook, while ratings remain in the single A range for our UK operating companies and the majority of our US operating companies. So turning finally to the summary on slide 24, National Grid has had a strong year. We've managed the challenges that COVID has brought and helped our most vulnerable customers whilst maintaining network reliability. We'll see higher costs in the near term due to COVID, but given our regulatory mechanisms, we currently don't expect to see significant economic impact in the longer term. In the coming year, we'll continue to focus on our upcoming regulatory negotiations in both the US and the UK and our interconnected delivery in NGV, whilst looking to advance the energy transition. We expect another strong year of capital deployment, investing around £5 billion in critical infrastructure, which will help to continue to grow our assets within our 5-7% target range. I believe our disciplined approach, coupled with a focus on delivering efficiently for our customers, will enable us to continue to create long-term value for our shareholders and debt holders. And with that, I'd like to thank you all for listening. I'll now hand over to the operator for questions. If you have any outstanding questions at the end of the call, please send them to our dedicated debt investor email address, which is debtinvestors@nationalgrid.com. Operator, please continue.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. If you change your mind, please press star followed by two. When preparing to ask your questions, please ensure your phone is unmuted locally. We have a question from Andrew Morda from CreditSights. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Hi, Alex. Thanks for the call. I have quite a few questions, but maybe I'll start with, maybe it's a bit unfair, this one. Just on your presentation this morning, there was a slide in the appendix. It's slide 57. I don't know if you have it in front of you, and I apologise to anyone on the call who doesn't.
I don't, sorry, but carry on anyway. Okay.
No, I was just going to say it shows volumes for the various businesses, and I think it's trying to show how much of the volumes are dependent or independent of revenues, but I'm just not sure exactly what it shows in that slide, so maybe I can actually come back to you afterwards on that and just get that clarified, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It's probably the easiest thing.
Okay. Secondly, there were a lot of questions on the call this morning about precedents and recovering sort of COVID impacts in the US. Some of it seems to be through a regulatory mechanism, which is already within the regulation and the rate basis, and some of it seems to be relying on some kind of regulatory precedent where you believe there are examples of recoveries being made in the past. I wonder, could you just perhaps outline for me which of the US opcos actually have a clear regulatory mechanism in place that enables you to recover these costs, and which ones are relying on precedents to be able to recover those costs? And is that different depending on what type of cost it is? I mean, if it's lower revenues because of low demand, is it in the regulation? And if it's because of bad debts, is it some kind of precedent? Could you perhaps just give a bit more clarity on that? Go on.
Sorry, do you want me to answer that and then move to the next question?
Yeah, okay, that's fine, okay. Yes.
So each of the opcos is a mix of the two. So each of the states has raised an order about the impact of COVID to understand you know, how that will work and how that's impacting us as utilities within the state. Some of the increased levels of bad debt, for example, are already recoverable under existing mechanisms. But some of it, where we're going, if you like, above that, would need to be recovered via new rate plans. And that's where we will go in with new filings at an appropriate point, as we set out earlier, in terms of you know, the planned timetable of the next few years, and then seek to recover at that point. And it's there, I guess, that you know, conversations with regulators will occur around the precedent for that. But it does give us confidence in the fact that there will be, if you like, a short-term impact from COVID, but not a long-term economic impact for the group.
Right. I mean, is it possible in any way to quantify within the... I mean, I think you said it was something like 400 million you were expecting was the main sort of impact, was the impact next year, and a lot of that was in the US. So the part that is in the US, I mean, is it possible to quantify, I guess, how much is that 400 million is in the US, and further, how much of what's in the US is actually recoverable through existing mechanisms, and how much is still reliant on these precedents?
Well, so the vast majority of that is in the US. I mean, as we said, there is some impact in the UK and there is some limited impact in National Grid Ventures. But the vast majority of that £400 million is within the US regulated business. I think there is quite a lot of uncertainty around it. So this is a forecast for us, but it obviously does depend on how we're seeing customers paying, and where we're allowed to be charging, where we're filing, and what the filing outcomes for Kedley and NIMO deliver. And there's also, you know, uncertainty on what impact that would be through the impacts in the UK as well. So I think it's quite hard to give you a state-by-state, OpCo-by-OpCo split. But as I say, the vast majority of it is a US impact.
Right. Okay. All right. Next question then. I think these are probably a bit more direct. On NatGrid electricity transmission, you mentioned that they'd probably be coming back to the market. Would you be looking to issue green bonds there again, or are you just sort of brown bonds?
So as we said at the time, we issued our green bond back in January. Looking ahead and looking at the forecast CapEx at that time, we anticipate broadly a third of our capex would fall into the different criteria we've set up within the green financing framework. So that I kind of should give you an idea of whether we might be coming back with NGET green bonds or brown bonds, but it'll certainly be a mix. And as I say, broadly a third of future capex we think falls within the green financing framework criteria.
Okay. Next sort of simple one. You mentioned that the electricity system operator has a 550 million facility. Is that purely for the ESO's use, or is that also available for NatGrid PLC use if it's needed?
That's purely for the ESO.
Okay, right. And finally, just on the rating, I mean, obviously you mentioned that metrics are going to be weaker next year because of the COVID impacts. Do you still see your A3, A- rating at the UK OpCos as safe, or do you think that there will need to be some consideration of the new RIIO-T2 framework within the assumption of the ratings?
So obviously, the rating agencies are looking ahead and following Ofgem, they'll be looking at the draft determinations that come out. But they'll be aware that it's not just the headline numbers that come out from that are important, but the overall broad financial package. We remain confident that we will get to a position with Ofgem that we can accept the final determinations that they come out with at the end of this calendar year. And that will enable us to continue with our rating as it currently is. Clearly, we'll look to see where they come out within their draft determinations, as will the agencies, and indeed at the final determination, if we do find that it's a package that we can't live with for whatever reason, we are then able to go to the Competition Markets Authority, on any aspect of that package if we find it's something that we cannot live with.
Right, okay. And maybe just one more quick question. The gas constraints in New York, I mean, they were obviously a big issue when it originally arose, but you said in the presentation that you expect an outcome of the discussions that you're having sometime this summer. I mean, we've kind of already started the summer. You've also got New York having to deal with COVID impacts. Do you really think it's realistic that you'll get some sort of settlement in that this summer?
So we currently expect so, but obviously we are talking to the state, we're talking to the regulator. That's the current, if you like, expected timeline that we're all working to.
Okay, thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to ask any further questions, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. We have a question from Derek Carr from SMS. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just in relation to the UK business and the final determination on RIIO-T2, I think from the material I've seen already, it's going to be quite challenging. I'm just wondering how you foresee COVID impact on that and the likelihood of maybe it getting more challenging, given that consumers will probably need to be protected even more in the post-COVID world from any increases in charges. I was just wondering how you saw that going.
Yeah, absolutely. So you'll have seen the business plans that we submitted for both gas and electricity transmission back in December last year. They actually were already looking at customers and the impact on customers from our proposals, and we were able to contain the impact on bills within those business plans. So we're not expecting a particular impact as a result of COVID. We understand that Ofgem are keen to stick to the timetable that they've set out, and we're keen to do that as well. Also, keen to think about the future and think about how we need to transition the transmission lines and think about the energy transition going forward. They have that in their sights as well. So we're not particularly expecting any impact from COVID as a result of that.
Okay, thanks. And just on, you mentioned material bad debt increases in the US business. Is there no similar phenomenon expected in the UK, or is it a different type of structure that you wouldn't see it in the UK as well?
You're talking about the impact of COVID on cash flows?
On bad debt, sorry, bad debt.
Yeah, understood. So in the US, we are a business-to-customer B2C business. So we are charging individual consumers, and that's where we see the greater impact on bad debt. In the UK, we're business to business, so our customers, the people that pay our revenues, are the supplier businesses, and therefore there's a more muted impact from that, albeit that there are some regulatory discussions going on at the moment as to how perhaps we can give some more support to the suppliers as an industry with other network companies.
Okay, that was all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Operator, are there any other questions?
We have a question from Trent Black from Michelin. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for the call. Just a couple quick questions. On the forecasted impact to cash flows. You mentioned on slide 5 the $3 billion increase in net debt. How much is that related to kind of the COVID-19?
So we anticipate that the of that forecast increase to $31.5 billion of net debt at the end of March 2021, around a billion of that is relating to COVID-19. That obviously encompasses the $400 million impact on operating profit, plus other working capital impacts around cash collections, both in the UK and the US. So about £1 billion.
Okay, and most of that, considering that the $400 million earnings impact is basically the U.S., is it safe to assume that that billion is mostly going to be U.S. related?
Yeah, so a lot of it will. It slightly depends on the conversations, as I just referenced now, that we're having in the U.K. with Ofgem, the regulator, along with other network companies about how we support some of the supply companies in the UK. That may impact us over the year end. It depends where Ofgem come out on that. But again, it would be a working capital item that would impact the electricity system operator in particular.
Okay, and for the US-based OPCOs, would that sort of reverse out, you know, over the next couple of years, that billion or so of cash flow, you know, as you kind of recover over the next couple of years?
So it's hard to put a timeline on it because it depends OPCO by OPCO where we are in each of our regulatory filing plans and the timelines around that. But it's certainly something that we do expect to be able to reverse out over a period as we start to make our filings in order to get our recoveries.
Okay. So kind of final question, you know, sort of jumping on Andrew's question for the UK opcos. What about the US opcos? You know, given that a number of them are already at Moody's on a negative outlook, you know, we have this cash flow hit that's going to weaken metrics even more. Is the, you know, do you guys anticipate being able to keep, you know, A3, A- at the US opcos in the near term?
So, you know, we do expect the rating agencies to take their, what I might call their normal approach with COVID, i.e. to look across a longer time frame rather than focus on short-term timing impacts. The agencies are well aware of the you know, regulatory mechanisms that we have in order to recover. And obviously, we're in contact with them, talking them through how we see this playing out. So we expect them to take a longer term view, if you like, of what those impacts might be.
Would you take any steps to try to keep them if, you know, from a regulatory standpoint, you know, if that doesn't play out, is the intent to keep them there or, you know, just let the, you know, chips fall where they may from a rating standpoint?
So I think we would be very surprised if the agencies would look at this negatively from a COVID impact. Clearly, as you say, some of the ratings are on negative outlook for the New York operating companies, and those are the ones that we are sort of going back into rate filings on this year. We've talked about Kedney and Kedley and how that might play out, and indeed at Niagara Mohawk. So I think we would be talking with the agencies very clearly after the outcomes of those settlements. And we obviously have an eye to the credit metrics when we're talking to regulators you know, to give us the best outcome that we can.
Okay, thank you.
We have a question from Matt McMoney from Age. Please go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking the question. Just to piggyback on some earlier ones, I guess you talk about these regulatory recovery type mechanisms in place for the U.S. OpCos. And I guess just the question is, particularly in New York, I mean, we've seen other states kind of announce these deferral accounting orders for incremental kind of COVID costs. New York has yet to do so. I mean, is there specific comments or language that they're telling you that kind of gives you more confidence that you're able to recover these in future rate cases? Or do you see that maybe potentially them issuing an order? Just kind of more clarity there would be helpful.
So, yeah, we're obviously in contact with the New York regulator on a regular basis. Lots of dialogue recently around COVID. And part of the conversations for NIMO and KEDNY and KEDLI in New York will obviously focus on when we get to our decisions around what we're doing on the rate filings. We're obviously in settlement discussions at the moment with KEDNY and KEDLI and hoping that that will play out. And also talking to them about Niagara Mohawk, whether we go for the one-year extension or indeed sort of file a rate plan as had been originally planned. So we've obviously got lots of dialogue going on with them, including around COVID.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. And then just kind of one more clarification type question. So you talked about with the New York gas constraints, expecting some sort of resolution this summer or announcement this summer. If I'm not mistaken, I think back in November when you announced the lift on the moratorium, there was some sort of June deadline. Was that an internal constraint internal deadline just to be sure to have something in place by the time the short-term agreement was lifted, or is that a regulatory-type deadline?
That was something that was agreed with the governor and something that's you know, been in place, and we've met the intervening deadlines that we were also discussing at that time as well.
Okay, so something later this summer, we could chalk that up more to kind of COVID-type delay and not some sort of penalty-type thing, right?
Sorry, I didn't understand the question.
Oh, just, I mean, the initial deadline you stated was in June. Now you're saying sometime in the summer, so maybe indicating maybe like August, or I'm just making sure there's no kind of penalty for not meeting the deadline.
No.
Okay, thank you.
We have a question from Christian Schwartz from PIMCO. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for hosting the call. I would like to understand this bridge a bit better. So from 400 million to a billion to 3 billion, is the 400 million to a billion, is that essentially working capital and the 1 billion to 3 billion net debt effect? Is that a function of CapEx continuing but rates cases not following through? Or how do I get the cash flow to net debt effect?
Okay. Yes, absolutely. So I guess let's split it into COVID and non-COVID. So 2 billion would be the normal non-COVID impact on net debt. It's a function of the fact that obviously we've got cash, operating cash inflows, but we are growing, spending about 5 billion on CapEx. And then the additional billion comes from COVID. Of that, 400 million of that is an operating profit impact, which obviously flows through operating cash flows into net debt. And the remainder is working capital type movement. So, we're still charging revenues, but we've got a delay in cash collections, for example. So more debtors sitting on the balance sheet.
Thanks for that. And is there any very natural reaction function? Is there what an expectation of more time needed to get them through to rates filings? Would that mean additional hybrid issuance to bridge a bit further? Is there anything more in the toolkit that you can do to preserve senior unsecured credit quality?
Sorry, you were fading in and out on my phone as you were asking that second question. Could you repeat it, Christian?
Yeah, sorry, I'm trying again. So in terms of reaction functions, and it seems that you need to bridge something from a credit metrics perspective. Do you have any tools at hand? Are you looking into it's an additional hybrid for a five-year tenor? Is that something that could solve that issue? Are there any others on the call this morning? Asset disposals have been clearly ruled out. I'm trying to understand whether there is anything left in what you could pull off in order to maintain metrics where the agencies want them to be.
Yeah, so, I mean, as I just reflected, I think the agencies, they're never looking at individual years. They're always looking out over a period of years. We wouldn't necessarily expect them to take an action as a result of what we would say would be a short-term timing impact, but rather take a longer-term time frame. I guess in relation to hybrids, I mean, it is a tool for us. As you know, you've seen us issue hybrids in the past when we perhaps have had high levels of investment that we needed to cover, but not something we're planning at the moment.
Thanks so much.
Any further questions, operator?
Yes, so we have a question from Andrew Moulders from CreditSights. Please go ahead.
Yes, sorry, Alex. I just wanted to follow up on Christian's question there. So just to be clear, you're saying that you don't need to do anything sort of out of the ordinary in terms of hybrid issuance or asset sales or anything like that in order to protect your rating through the COVID trough that we're going to see next year. At least that's your expectation with the way the rating agencies act.
So I would never presume to say that to you from the point of view of the rating agencies. You need to ask them that. Our understanding is that yes, they will look through and think about this as a short-term timing impact where we can demonstrate that we have regulatory mechanisms and we will be able to recover these costs. So right. I don't think it's any different from a normal timing swing in that respect. In the sense that they will always look out for a trend of metrics over a period of years rather than at any particular year's metric.
Okay, that's fair. I agree with you, but I just wanted to be sure what your thinking was. Thank you.
Okay, well, I'm conscious of time. Sorry, did we have another question on the call?
It appears we have no further questions.
No. Okay. Well, just to remind you then of that email address that I read out, debtinvestors@nationalgrid.com. If you do have any outstanding questions, please shoot them through via email. But thank you very much again for joining us on this call. Thank you for your support over the past year. As I say, any further questions, do shoot them across to us. Thank you. Goodbye.